She had always dreamed of running in the Boston Marathon, but to do so out of state, it's an incredibly expensive endeavor. It costs the average person on average about $4,000 to do so when you factor in travel, nutrition, training, all of those things. So she was able to use our platform, earn money for the Boston Marathon.
All right, welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. We're here with Mack Wilkinson. It's been a while. We had you on the podcast. How long has it been?
That was back in May of 2021. It's been been quite a while
about
since we got to talk about
3 years. So a lot of progress, big updates. We're looking forward to catching up. I got to ask, though, on that last podcast, your son, it was the cutest thing ever, was peeking through the window, yelling at you. We stopped the podcast a couple times. We were glad to do it. So I got to ask, how old is your son now?
Yeah, he's 8 years old. It's kind of crazy that the timing of all this, 2 or 3 days ago, he randomly brought that up. And, you know, I think probably like 2 summers ago or something like that, I had showed it to him and stuff like that.
No way.
And, awesome. You know, I thought it was just so funny that he was just at the door and I was kind of trying to shoo him away at the same time. And he was like, I had to pee. So,
that's hilarious. You should have brought him. That would have been great to have him be featured in another Middle Tech episode.
Well, we were talking about that before the podcast. I mean, if my dad was on a radio show or being filmed, I'd be like, that's pretty cool too. It doesn't matter what it is.
I'd be trying to get in there too as a kid.
Absolutely. I don't think he cared that much, but hopefully one day he'll look back on it and think it's dope. So,
Before we get into talking about Millathon, I just want to get a quick word from our sponsors. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website, and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working.
All right, Mack. Like we said, been a while since we've had you on. So I think the best place to start with this podcast is just giving us a refresher on Millathon. So lots gone on in 3 years. I'm sure the company has grown in a lot of different ways. And we're going to get into all of that. But before we talk about all of that, let's just do a refresher. What do you tell people when they ask, what is Millathon?
So Millathon is a performance-based fundraising platform. It gives groups, organizations, and individuals the ability to raise money with the miles you walk, run, or bike.
So I'm looking at this through a new lens. I was telling you this before we jumped on. This past year, I got into running. So I can look at it and say, I see the application. You know, I saw it before, but now it's more personal. It's really awesome. So give an example of, you know, an activation you all have done or a virtual event that you've helped, you know, bring sponsorship dollars and athletes together in kind of a good cause.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had people use our platform for tons of things, you know, from raising money for great causes and charities to even trying to earn money for a wedding and at the same time lose a little weight. And so we've had, you know, one great example that I always talk about is a young lady who used our platform. She had always dreamed of running in the Boston Marathon, but to do so out of state, it's an incredibly expensive endeavor. It costs the average person on average about $4,000 to do so when you factor in travel, nutrition, training, all of those things. So she was able to use our platform, earn money for the Boston Marathon, and, you know, pay her way through and kind of sponsor herself. So
that's super cool. And just to really kind of materialize it for the listeners. So athletes or whoever's running to raise the money can kind of run wherever they want. They can say, I want somebody to support me on a per dollar basis per mile sort
that's
of thing.
Right.
So kind
that's
of
right.
Explain how it works from that.
So if you're an individual, you can share your profile, get friends and family to sponsor you. They sponsor a dollar amount per mile limited to a maximum number of miles they set. Once you have sponsors, you simply go out and track your run, walks, or bike rides with Mulathon, and every mile that you log earns a bit more from each sponsor's total pledge. Once you complete the total miles that a sponsor has pledged, they're charged and the money shows up in your account within 7 to 10 business days. And if you're a group or organization, you can host virtual fitness challenges on the platform. And these are like 5Ks or something like that. However, these 5Ks are incredibly expensive to put on. So they require hundreds of man hours, volunteer man hours, and also the initial capital to cover some of that initial overhead. So that limits that level of fundraising to a very, our organization that has a lot of resources. And so Mulathon kind of opens it up for any and everyone, regardless of their resources.
Yeah, it's such a cool idea. And maybe let's talk a little bit, because last time we had you on was kind of right after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
What did that do to the business during that?
I think
that?
We were right in the middle of COVID.
Actually, you're right. I think it was 2020. I think I misspoke. I think it was 2020, not 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about building a business that you're kind of taking this idea of having an organized, everyone together sort of 5K, for example, and making it virtual where you can run wherever. So was COVID kind of a tailwind for you guys?
So yeah, actually, I don't think we had a product in the marketplace. We were still testing at the time that we had
gotcha.
Set down.
Makes sense.
And COVID kind of kicked us in the pants and kind of made us put it out there.
Yeah.
So when COVID happened, because we had won some awards and some competitions and things like that, people who were planning their fundraisers year round, their fitness fundraisers, were forced with cancellation, right? And in some cases, they had hundreds and in some cases, even thousands of people that had already signed up for an event. And they kind of hit the panic button, like, you know, what are we going to do? Like, what are the alternatives? And so when they started Googling, our name started coming up and the emails started coming in. And I probably turned away 30 to 40 people before I sat down with a mentor of mine and was telling them, you know, like all these people, but, you know, we're months away from. And they were like, don't do that. Like, yeah. Definitely don't
say
do
yes
that.
And figure it out.
Yeah, say yes yeah. and figure it out. And so we literally, like, it was like slapping duct tape on it and, you know, sending it out there. So it was pretty cool.
I think just because it's been a while since we told the story, talk just briefly about actually starting. So, like, where did the idea come from?
Yeah.
I know that Rondo is involved in yes. some capacity, so maybe yes. we can hit on that as well. But just yeah. talk about actually starting the business. Was this your first venture and, you know, all of that sort of
stuff? Well, no, it wasn't my first venture, but I'll tell you a little bit about the history about me and Mulathon and how it all came about. I'm a former professional basketball player, and I grew up playing sports my entire life. And for me, playing on underprivileged youth sports teams, when the season ended, that meant that immediately we had to start fundraising. I'm talking about selling popcorn, washing cars, mulch, all of those things, right? And then as I get older, get through college and start helping to organize 5Ks and things like that for some of the organizations I care about, it would blow my mind to hear them at the end of all this, you know, be like, we raised $10,000, we raised $15,000. And in my head, I'm thinking, how in the heck is this possible when I would slave for months to, you know, raise a few hundred dollars to go on a trip or to get some uniforms or something like that. And so when I saw the power of what they were doing and then started researching some of the limitations, which was what I mentioned earlier with it being like, you know, exclusive to a lot of the groups and organizations that have a lot of resources, I set out to create a platform that I thought could level the playing field and bring that level of fundraising to all groups and organizations, regardless of their size.
So I think it's fair. Is it fair to say that part of the space that you're in is this gamification of the real world? So you've got Pokemon Go,
yep.
or you've got the gamification of maybe learning a new language. You know, where do you look for an inspiration in your product and what do you compare it to?
So it's funny that you mentioned Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go was a huge inspiration. So I was actually involved in a 5K and had my nephews in town and they were doing the whole Pokemon Go thing. And it just kind of all came together as a way to sort of, bridge the gap and help these people raise money. You know, fitness fundraising is a $14 billion industry. It's one of the most popular ways to raise money. People raise money through marathons and 5Ks. And they're a great way to raise money, but again, limited to the groups and organizations that have the resources to execute such.
Makes sense. And, you know, one of the primary reasons we want to do this new style of podcast where we bring entrepreneurs back on is to talk about what you have learned over the time building your company. So let's get into that part of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I guess we can start kind of broad. And just any learnings that you have about Muathon, but I'd like to get down into some specific challenges and successes that you guys have faced as well.
Absolutely. But it's great timing on that. You know, we recently, about a year ago, hired just two salespeople. They did great things for our revenues, but they also allowed us to talk to a lot of customers, right? And one thing that I wanted to try to figure out when talking to these customers is, you know, how can we get more active, daily active users? You know, we obviously can see, you know, how often people are using the platform. And we saw that a lot of people were coming to the platform to, you know, do these one-off, two-off type of events, and then not necessarily using it on a daily basis. So I wanted to try to talk to them and communicate that. Well, it turns out that, you know, after talking to a lot of these people, we heard the same thing, you know, over and over again. A lot of the people that use our platform are fitness-minded individuals. They've already tried 2, 3, 4 different wearable devices, 2 or 3 or 4 different platforms before they decided how they want to capture that data, which device, and then where they want that data to live, right? And what we were doing initially, and what we still are on some level, and what we're still correcting on some level, is we were forcing them to use a fitness tracker that we built, which is sort of reinventing the wheel. You know, there's a lot of people out there that do this, you know, that have been doing this a lot longer than us. And so what they told us was, if we can continue to work out in the same ways that we have been, using the same tools that we have been, then this is something that we would love to use on a daily basis. And so, they told us, you know, hey, you know, I would love to, you know, use this platform, you know, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 times a year for the causes and organizations that I care about. But in order to get me to use this on a daily basis, it has to connect to these certain platforms, which in our case is Strava, Fitbit, and Garmin. And so we've already built a tie-in to Strava. We're building, you know, tie-ins to some of these other platforms, and we're just making it a lot easier for people to continue to raise money for causes, organizations, and groups that they care about, you know, through Muathon.
So you're helping other people raise money. How have you funded the business? So over time, as the business has evolved, how have you maintained, you know, being able to hire employees, pay yourself, and also develop products? How is fundraising involved?
Yeah. So initially we raised a lot of money through, you know, pitch competitions, as you know, fellow Render winner and everything. So, you know, we won Render Capital. We won a KY270 competition. And then most recently, we participated in Techstars, which was less about funding and more about resources and connections. But through pitch competitions, and then we've also, through the community that we've built, we've had some great angel investors that have really loved what we've done, that really believe in what we do. One of them, of course, being Rajan Rondo, and you know, have wanted to help and invest in the company. And that's how we funded it until today.
That's awesome that the pitch competitions have given you guys some capital to go through that too. I'm sure everyone that puts on those pitch competitions and all the work that goes into that kind of makes it worth it, you know, to see it supporting a business in this ecosystem. Talk about Rondo being involved. So you've mentioned like angel investors, and them kind of helping you along. What would your advice be to other entrepreneurs who maybe want to raise from angels, and like kind of what to look for and how angels can kind of support a business? If you have any experience around that, I think that'd be.
Yeah, I think excitement, great. You know, all the angels that we've had invest in our company, it's not something that we've, you know, super sought out. You know, we've done some angel groups, but usually, you know, people come up to us and they say, hey, you know, I'm a runner myself. I love doing this. And they have some sort of personal connection. So I would say, you know, if there's anything, you know, look for an angel who's passionate about what you're doing, because it solves a problem that they see in the space as well. And, you know, someone who's just passionate about the problem that you're solving.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about specifically any challenges that you face. I'm sure it's not just been all smooth sailing the whole time.
No.
So what comes to mind when you think of challenges that you guys have overcome since you last came on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been several points, you know, one of them being that it sucks to say this, but the pandemic ending, you know, we saw a big surge in the beginning, and then we saw a big drop off, and then we had to maintain. Now we're currently facing a challenge with employee wellness. You know, we just ventured into the employee wellness space. We've got 5 companies in our beta. It's a great opportunity for companies to not only get remote and local employees moving, but also donate to the causes, groups, and organizations that companies care and the employees as well care about. So, you know, we're always facing challenges. I mean, every single day, you know, there's a different challenge, and that's kind of what keeps us on our toes and makes us entrepreneurs, I guess. So
beta programs, you know, they're so important because they help you design the product, they make sure you're building something that hits on pain points. Give advice to anybody listening that, you know, might have an idea, might have an early stage product, and how to approach a company for a beta, how to structure the beta and make sure that they're getting good outcomes from it and like getting value from that beta program.
Yeah, I personally need advice on that myself. Okay. but like, for example, our employee wellness beta, one of the reasons why we joined Techstars is to sort of like refine our offering. We've, you know, five companies in our beta and we've got like three solutions. You know, in the beginning, you're at that point where it's like you almost can't afford to say no to business, or and you kind of just have to figure out, you know, like what works best for each of these clients. But eventually, in order to scale, you obviously cannot scale that way. You have to sort of take pieces from each of those experiences and sort of refine your offering into one thing. And that's kind of like the point we are right now with our employee wellness program, is that we think that we've got a pretty refined product so that we're not just, you know, just having a different solution for every company. But that's very important, you know, to in that early stage. Like you said, betas are very important to try to understand what is it that these companies need, what problems are we solving, and then what problems do they have that we're not solving yet. Yeah. So.
And then that all feeds into product development, right? So how have you built the product? You know, I think one of the scary things about entrepreneurship is you have these ideas, but then you got to take steps to actually, you know, build the idea. And that's one thing that's tough about software is, you know, there's only so many software engineers out there. Mm. There's only so many resources you have because building a piece of software is very expensive. So walk through, you know, of course you can raise money, but how have you built the program? Have you been working with agencies? Do you have a developer on staff? Yep. I'm sure it's maybe a mixture. So how has that evolved as the business evolved?
Yeah, we found a formula that works with us after going through, you know, many developers and many development situations, losing money in offshore development. But we've got two great guys here, one that helps run our mobile platform and one that does our web platform. And they run a team of guys that are, you know, in another country in Ukraine. And so, but they're our point people. They handle all the code through GitHub and everything. And, you know, it's a formula that has worked for us for the past 2 years. And we finally feel like we've got some great stability to the point where we're ready to scale, you know, our development team.
I've been there and lost a lot of money on overseas development. Oh, it is a headache. What have you learned about managing a development team that is overseas? You know, I had somebody that was kind of playing mediator in between. And I think that was both a benefit, but also made it a little bit messy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what you've learned about overseas development teams and how to leverage them and things to watch out for. So anybody listening, you know, can think about that.
Well, don't try to manage them yourself. That's like one of the biggest things. And in the beginning, honestly, you might not be able to afford to do anything else. You know, you might only have, you know, that 30 grand to get the app built, and you got to, you know, rely on some people to get that MVP built. I certainly did myself, and I was sort of acting as the project manager. But as soon as you can offload project manager, a technical project manager, a lead developer is key, because they know, you know, what code is quality, you know, who's producing quality code, at what efficiency level they should be producing this code, and things like that. So I think that's probably the key, is just don't put too much on your plate. You know, as an entrepreneur now, that's like one of the things that I'm as I scale, I'm trying to offload the hats that I wear, because I wear a lot of hats. So
I'm curious, since both of you guys have experienced kind of similar things with trying to outsource development of building your all's programs, would you guys do anything differently knowing what you know about how AI is affecting the entire space? Would you try to first build a prototype with somebody who understands code a little bit using some of these new AI tools that are coming up? Would that change anything at all? I'd like to hear both of y'all's thoughts on that.
I think in the current state, it wouldn't change anything. It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, it is making engineers much more efficient. So basically there might be the ability to find, you know, more of a junior or mid-level engineer that can be a lot more productive. One of the benefits of finding overseas talent is that they're wages are much lower, and you can have more people working on the app, and you might be able to move a little bit quicker. And, you know, it's kind of always a coin flip if it's going to be good quality or not. And so one thing that maybe AI could help with is by making, you know, junior or mid-level engineers more productive. But, you know, I think that's kind of a ways off from that seriously affecting just such an early stage product. And we're really kind of a far ways off from a person that doesn't know how to develop and just use AI to develop a product. So I still think we're still in a super early stages of that, of really affecting the early stages beyond a productivity standpoint.
I 100% agree. I think it's another tool. I think, you know, it can aid productivity 100% and make people more efficient. If you know what you're doing and you have AI as a tool, it'll make you more efficient and that much better of a developer. But again, because it's such a new place, you could end up losing money in that space too, because I mean, you know, who knows how good AI can generate code or find snippets of code and things like that, you know, have to know what you're doing.
Another way to put it is, AI isn't to the point it can really architect the product yet. You know, in the early stages, when you're going from just a drawing or an idea to something somebody can use, you still have to have an architect. A developer really kind of, again, architect the infrastructure of how the product's built. I haven't seen anything where AI is to that point yet. AI is really just kind of an augmentation of developers using their own creativity and knowledge of architecture to build the product. So, yeah, I think it's still a little early to tell if somebody can take an idea to an MVP with a serious amount of the work being done by AI. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the way I was thinking of it, like if I was somebody who's not technical and I wanted to go out and try and build an app or a program of some sort, I would probably try the outsourced agency route. But then me not being super technical might try to use AI to understand like what the code they're writing is actually.
That would actually be a brilliant use. I would say that would be a brilliant use, is trying to, you know, verify what they're doing and make yourself more knowledgeable and efficient.
Yeah. Kind of a learning process.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the big updates that you shared with us that we definitely want to dive into is Techstars. You just brought that up. So let's talk about that whole experience. First off, just tell us how you got involved with that. What is the process of applying for Techstars or getting chosen for Techstars? What does that look like? What kind of criteria do they judge on? All of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're a founder, I think a lot of founders understand that there's like Techstars and YC. And those are like when it comes to like accelerators, you know, those are the people that can, you know, get you in the rooms that you want to get involved with, you know, and get you around the type of founders, the innovative talent and things like that, that you know, you rarely have a chance to be around. And so we had tried early, you know, probably 2020, 2021, when I don't even know if we had customers yet, when we tried to get into the Indianapolis Sports Accelerator, and we didn't get in. And, you know, then I started hearing all the crazy stuff about it's harder to get into Techstars than it is Harvard and Yale. I mean, it's probably fluff. I don't know if it's real or not, but they say those kind of things. And so, I was a little bit, you know, discouraged by the process. And then we had some success with other pitch competitions and things as well. And so it wasn't until, I'm not sure if you guys know Kelly Evanye. He's in the
I met him once.
He's in the Louisville ecosystem. He's a brilliant guy. He's actually seen an exit with Mailhaven. He's an entrepreneur in residence with it's slipping my mind, but he's a pillar in our Louisville startup ecosystem. And, you know, he was like, hey, if you ever want to, you know, try to get into Techstars, you know, I can help you, you know, craft it to make yourself, you know, appealing and match their criteria. And so, you know, I worked closely with him, consulted with Stephen Platt, as you know, who's also a 2-time Techstars founder. And, you know, we were able to, you know, with the traction that we had gained, you know, we became a little bit more of an appealing company, and we got into the JP Morgan Washington DC program, which I am super blessed that we got into. You know, we heard time and time again that you know, we were one of, if not the most, you know, diverse group of founders, you know, possibly in Techstars history, certainly in recent years. We have people from Spain, from Ecuador, female founders, male founders, people of all ethnicities and races. And so it was just a really great collective of people to be around.
Yeah, so let's dive into what it's like actually being a part of that program. So I'm sure everyone has different experiences with it, but what's it been like spending time around the other entrepreneurs that are part of the program, and what kind of things have you learned from being a part of it?
Yeah, really inspiring. You know, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people that you're involved with, both as founders that are also involved in the cohort and also the people they put you in rooms with. You know, before we started the program, you know, they made us put together this spreadsheet of, you know, who are your 50 dream people, whether they be companies, whether they be founders, whether they be CEO, that we can put you in a room with, right? And, you know, you kind of put together this list and, you know, you don't know if it's like a theoretical thing or whatever. And, you know, as time goes on and, you know, as they teach you things throughout the program and as they have these great TechStars events, you know, I got to be in the room with some of the, you know, top people at Under Armour and some of these other people that had direct alignments with what we're trying to do. So really, it's just, you know, access to other founders who are also trying to do other things and have other experiences, and you can call on them, you know, to help you solve problems. And also as well, you know, it's the TechStars network itself, which is the real power of everything. You know, they have a whole thing about the degrees of separation. You know, they're usually only about 2 degrees of separation from just about anyone. So, yeah, it's really great to sort of be able to have those conversations and see if you can get connected to people who you think can move your product forward. So
talk about the diversity piece. I'm sure it's really cool to work alongside founders from other countries and just with different diverse backgrounds. What are you seeing them bring to the table that, you know, is surprising you or is really unique?
Yeah. So we had a founder from Spain. He was doing a online sign language platform that was really amazing. He was solving that problem. His platform was so slick and so smooth. And then, you know, we had a guy from Mexico City that was helping with border issues. You know, they deal with different. It was really great to see all the different problems that people are solving.
Yeah.
And, you know, with them, you know, it was a big thing about borders and how to get across the border more efficiently, more like a clear type of a thing for actual borders.
Clear is a lifesaver.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had two founders that were from Ecuador. And, you know, it turns out like in South America, you know, a lot of people travel via bus. And the problem with traveling via bus is there's that a lot of people don't like, it's like something like 88% of the people don't use credit cards or anything. Right. And so they actually started a business on WhatsApp that allowed people to schedule bus trips and pay for them all on WhatsApp. And they've sort of expanded their platform for there. So being around that type of innovative talent to people who are just really trying to like solve problems and solutions from not just unique to the United States or your city or your ecosystem, you know, it really just opens your mind up to other things. You know, it helped me look at my business a different way. I had just being around those people, I had all kinds of thoughts about, you know, partnerships that I want to do in the future and where I want to take Mulathon in ways that I had never thought of it before.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting to surround yourself with diverse ideas and people is definitely a game changer. I think it's easy to, if you're a founder in Kentucky and you don't leave Kentucky, you know, kind of live in our own little bubble here.
That's
and
right.
You get out and you see how much bigger the world is and how much bigger people think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that it's hard to think as big as people in other parts of the world in Kentucky, especially San Francisco and New York.
That's right.
You know, but once you get in there and you see their mindset and how different it is and how much bigger. You know, we celebrate and we really want to raise maybe 500,000 here.
Mm-hmm.
You go to San Francisco, they're raising 2 million at the least. And
that's
so
right.
I'm not saying it's good or bad either way. I'm saying it's just interesting to see other people's mindset because they're from a diverse background or a different place
100%.
Or, you know, have different experiences from where they're from and the way they grew up. So I think that, you know, if we can figure out a way here in Kentucky to, you know, get people outside and go to San Francisco,
yes.
Figure out a way to fund them to get to these other places. I think if they come back, it brings more to our ecosystem.
100%. And, you know, I think that's good for anyone, regardless of the ecosystem you're in, with the exception of some of the large ones that you mentioned where they get to see a little bit of everything. But especially if you're from a smaller ecosystem like ours, it's definitely important to get out and just to see how other people think and the way that they approach problems.
I've had this idea for about 2 years, and this is after I started spending more time in San Francisco on Simba, when I would fundraise out there and just spend time with founders. Is how do we create like a passport program where like somebody within the Kentucky ecosystem gets basically a rolling fund going for mm-hmm. an Airbnb or flights.
Yes.
So that if a founder's onto
That's
something,
brilliant.
We can fund their travel expenses to these other markets and just get them to experience the other places and meet more investors.
That's right.
And we can create kind of a program or some kind of sponsored program for founders to get
a
out of Kentucky.
House.
That's exactly right. That's originally what the idea was
yeah.
I was out in San Francisco spending time in these founder houses, and I was like, this is insane. And we got to
right.
figure out how to get Kentucky founders in these founder houses.
And, you know, it's actually twofold, right? And I think that if you got, you know, more entrepreneurs from our ecosystem in places like, you know, San Francisco and places like Austin, and you know, I think that we would also attract people to Kentucky. You know, I think this is a great place to start a business as far as like, you know, it doesn't cost as much as in other cities to operate a business here, to hire people here. The cost of living is lower. It's a great place to start a business, but people don't really know that, or they don't care about that because the resources are more shallow. And so, because we don't necessarily have those resources or, those networking opportunities and we're not able to rub elbows, then, I think people kind of stay out of this ecosystem. But I think if that's, it would work in twofold. Yeah. Not only will we expose our entrepreneurs to that level of thinking and being outside of our ecosystem, but I think we might even attract a few people.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think when we first started Middle Tech, you know, I was pretty naive to the whole entrepreneur scene in the first place. But one of the things I thought was like, oh, we got to attract more capital here. Like there needs to be more VC firms and angel investors here. But in reality, especially watching Evan build Simba, I think it's probably the preferred thing to have entrepreneurs go to these other ecosystems where they're exposed to people who, like you guys have said, kind of think in a different way and mm-hmm. maybe think bigger than we think here in mm-hmm. Kentucky, and then be able to bring that back into Kentucky. And I think the idea for a sort of founder house thing is the path to go forward with that. So that needs to be spoken into existence. So
yeah,
whenever I set out to build a company, you guys have figured out how to send me to San Francisco for a little bit, stay in your all's founder house.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, I think the point you made there is I think it's important for founders to leave.
It is.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd agree.
A lot of the best founders, if you look around our ecosystem, the ones that are, you know, older in their 50s, 60s, you know, a lot of times they leave and go do investment banking in Chicago or New York, or they're out in San Francisco building a company and they boomerang back, you know, and oftentimes I think that the ecosystem is where it is because people left.
I mean, it's definitely situational, but I think it's hard to deny the effect that going into a bigger market can have on an entrepreneur, just purely from connections, which is a lot of what building a business is just your network and like how can you get in front of the people you need to get in front of. That's a huge thing that cities have going for them. But also just in terms of the mass amount of resources, just way more resources.
That's right.
In bigger cities. But anyway, I don't know if you have anything you wanted to add.
No,
to that
I mean, I was just going to say too, I mean, you know, make no mistake about it. I think that, you know, Louisville, Lexington, you know, we have an opportunity to become those things, and we need to look no further than Indianapolis or Cincinnati, and even Nashville to see. I mean, I don't know how much time you guys have spent in their tech ecosystem, but in the last 3-4 years, it has taken off, you know, as far as money that's being flown, that's, you know, being funneled through different founders and different companies, even to programs that are available, to more so like happenstance type of meetings, you know, in Louisville now that, you know, we've got Nulu, which is kind of cool because, you know, you can bump into, you know, there's certain coffee shops that I even avoid because I'm going to have like 15-20 minute conversations, you know, just because, you know, you rub elbows. But it's actually a great thing if you're trying to build a business to do that. In Austin, there's that energy. You know, there's certain areas of town you can go to and just rub elbows with anyone. You might see, you know, anyone there. Same thing in Silicon Valley, you know, Palo Alto. You know, you might go to a coffee shop and never know who's sitting across the room taking a meeting. And you never know what level of money's in the room, what check writers are in the room. We just need more of that energy. And more founders first need to leave Louisville and Lexington, Kentucky in general, to feel that energy. And I think, you know, we need to figure out a way to attract that energy to Kentucky, because it's inspiring and it's innovative to be in those environments.
Yeah, I think it just facilitates a mindset shift when founders do that, which is ultimately what Middle Tech is kind of here to try and facilitate, is a mindset shift around entrepreneurship and startups.
I love it.
But let's wrap things up here by talking about Mulathon again and what the future looks like for you guys. So,
yeah.
You know, you've been at this for over 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Talk about what the next 4 years are going to look like for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're just scaling. We're figuring out, you know, ways to make it easier to raise money for the causes, groups, and organizations you care about. We're venturing into new verticals, things like employee wellness. We're just growing the business and trying to venture into some other things. I've got some great ideas for partnerships down the line that I've been talking to some of my fellow TechStars people about, you know, partnering with municipalities, with cities, with bike rental companies and things like that. And so we've got a huge roadmap ahead, you know, in the next couple of months. You know, we've got some big development goals that we want to meet, first with the mobile platform and then with the web platform following that. New features that we're releasing, Mulathon Teams, which is a good thing, which allows groups to raise money for one cause instead of one person raising money from multiple people. So we've got big plans, and we just hope to come back here in another 3 or 4 years and tell you all about them. So
absolutely. Well, I hope Middle Tech's still going in 3 or 4 years, and then I hope we can have you back on to talk
about.
Yeah,
you'll be sold, and then you'll have to do like 30 minutes of commercials beforehand because you got all these sponsorships and everything. And yeah. Then we'll be in you guys' man cave, this beautiful place, and it'll be awesome.
That's right. Awesome. All right, Mac. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on and sharing and making the drive from Louisville. It's always awesome to get in person with people.
I am so glad that I came up here, not only to be around you guys and to check out this beautiful space, but it's always great to come up here and check in with you guys, man. Congratulations on everything that you've got going on. It's really awesome.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate it.